I'm going to talk a little bit about visual perceptual learning in infants, although I think a lot of my work sort of started out thinking that it was visual perceptual learning, and now I'm starting to think that it's more about conceptual learning. So, and I think the line between the two gets kind of difficult. But we know that visual perceptual learning in infants leads to expert-like abilities to recognize and identify faces and objects. But we are still trying to understand how this learning happens and what aspects of the environment are important. So you can imagine that while it's pretty important for an infant to be able to tell the difference between their mom from another mother or a stranger, it may not be that important for an infant to tell the difference between two different bottles. And so the way that they learn about the world is very different visually, depending on the level at which they need to recognize or differentiate the objects or faces. And so I've spent a lot of my time trying to understand the development of face processing in the first year of life. And as all of you know, faces carry critical information for successful navigation of the social world. And with just a single fixation on a face, you can make inferences about intentions and emotion, age, gender, race, identity, and attractiveness. And so we're all very good at doing processing faces very quickly and rapidly and gleaning pretty important information for social interactions from faces. However, there are biases in the face processing system. The most commonly reported bias is the other race effect, or the own race bias, that people tend to be better at differentiating or telling the difference between two faces within one's own race relative to another race. But there are other biases in the system, the other species effect, and there are also other age effects that you tend to be better at telling the difference between two faces of your own age or an age that you've previously experienced. And people who work with babies might know that they are also better at identifying and discriminating two different babies, or people report being able to be much more accurate at identifying the ages of babies if you have a lot of experience working with babies. So I've spent a lot of time trying to understand how these biases develop. We know that there are origins in infancy. Before 6 months of age, infants can easily tell apart faces within both familiar own race and unfamiliar groups. However, by 9 months, they tend to be better at distinguishing faces within familiar groups. And this decline is driven by infants' experience. And so it's akin to what a lot of you study in language, in that you have typically infants have an increased ability to tell the difference between non-native phonemes early in development, and that declines with language experience, with native language experience. So we like to make comparisons between the two, although can have discussions later about how I think they're different in a lot of ways. But we've called this process in visual processing perceptual narrowing or perceptual tuning, very similar to what's it's been called in language processing. And I use this bridge here to just give an example of how we think that, you know, if this is development over time, we think that they have very broad abilities that then become more specific with time. And you can think about this on multiple levels. And one of the things that I've sort of been thinking about a lot lately is how this might be implemented at the neural level. And so we can talk about that a little bit more at the end, but I wanted to just sort of put that in your head so you can start thinking about, you know, the different mechanisms that may be driving a process like this, brain development mechanisms or other kinds of mechanisms. So one thing that so the effect of perceptual narrowing in visual face processing is actually very robust. Many labs have found it, and it seems to be a very clear effect. However, we don't know quite that much about what narrows in visual perceptual narrowing. So what's driving the narrowing? What is it about the environment or the interaction of the baby with the environment that tends to lead to these more specific abilities for some groups of people versus others? And so the questions that I'm going to try and answer in the remaining time include, what are the factors that contribute to better discrimination among faces within some groups? Is perceptual narrowing a domain-specific process occurring for faces but not objects? Does learning in infancy have long-lasting effects? And does perceptual narrowing influence other aspects of face processing, like emotion processing? So we know from the adult perceptual expertise literature that adults that are trained at more subordinate levels tend to, relative to category or basic level processing or exposure training with objects or faces, tend to have increased discrimination of exemplars, greater holistic processing of those stimuli, and more specialized neural responses. So what I wanted to determine was whether learning faces at the individual level shape the specificity of the face processing system during development. So are the same processes that we use to become perceptual experts as adults driving what's happening during the development of face processing? And so we conducted a training design, a pre-test, post-test training design, and we brought infants in when they were 6 months of age and had them complete a visual paired comparison task, or a looking time task, and I'll explain that task in just a second. And then we also had them complete an inversion task while we recorded ERPs. Then we sent them home with books of monkey faces, and I'll explain the training in just a second, but we sent them home with books of monkey faces for 3 months. So remember that this time period from 6 months to 9 months is the time period where we usually see perceptual narrowing happening. So we wanted to see if we give infants training, whether we can change that trajectory. And then we brought them back at 9 months, and we did the same pre-test and post-test. One thing to note here is that the faces that we used during pre-test and post-test were not the same faces that we trained with. So any effects that we see are due to generalization to new exemplars that they were not trained with. And we had five different training groups. And so, sorry, I'm going to take a step back here. So we had both monkey faces and strollers. A lot of you might be wondering why we chose strollers. We have some good reasons for that, but really what we wanted to do was have a category of objects that didn't look like faces, that had similar parts to faces. So with strollers, you have the wheels, the seat, and the handlebar across all exemplars, just like you would have a mouth, a nose, and two eyes across all exemplars in the monkey faces, and to have similar homogeneity within a category. So if I average across all these faces, you'll get something that looks like a monkey face, and the same thing with the strollers. And we wanted to determine whether infants who were trained at the individual level in both objects and faces might maintain the ability to discriminate these stimuli at 9 months of age, and whether that differed from category training at this level. And then in the monkey group, we also had an exposure training group where they had no training at all. And the training consisted of just sending them home with a book with six pictures in it, and each picture was labeled, or in the exposure group, it was not labeled. And the parents were instructed to read the book to their infants every day for the first 2 weeks, every other day for the next 2 weeks, every third day for the next 2 weeks, and then every fourth day till they came back for their nine-month visit. And the looking time task that we use, so this is the poor man's eye tracker, which is videotape. slowed down, and then coding by lots of graduate students and undergraduates coding the position of the eye to determine whether they're looking at the left or the right side of the screen. And so if we show babies a picture for a really long time, they get bored with that picture, and then we can show them that picture with paired with a new picture, and if they can tell the difference between those two pictures, they'll typically show a novelty preference. So they'll look longer at the novel picture. And so we can make inferences about what infants know based on how long they look at the novel picture, whether they have a novelty preference. And so now I'm not going to present these data today, but now we've shifted into using an eye tracker to do some of this stuff. So not only do we get duration of looking at the novel versus the familiar picture, but we can also look at duration of first fixation, dwell time in different areas, strategies that they might be using, all sorts of interesting measures that we couldn't look at with video presentation or with videotaping. So our pretest, post-test ERP task looked at upright and inverted faces, and so the N170 inversion effect in adults is an index of holistic processing of faces and objects of expertise, and it's typically larger for inverted and slightly delayed for inverted versus upright faces, and it's much smaller in response to objects relative to faces. And so we wanted to determine whether infants trained at the individual level with monkey faces would exhibit an inversion effect for never seen before monkey faces, and also with objects of expertise with the with the strollers. So we wanted to determine whether that training would induce inversion effects that are similar to face-like inversion effects that they would develop for human faces, or whether they would treat these monkey faces more like objects. And just briefly, to go over some of the components that I'm going to talk about in the talk here. So this is the adult visual response. These are recorded over the occipital and temporal regions. And you can see that you get this P1 or P100 positive component followed by the N170 component followed by this small sort of negativity that occurs in this ongoing positivity is what several people have called the N250 response. And as a lot of you know, the N170 has been linked to faces and also linked to processing objects of expertise. And the N250 has also been linked to identifying faces and objects of expertise at the individual level. So very similar to the adult waveform, the infant waveform has a positive component followed by a negative component followed by this positive component. And this N250 doesn't seem to pop out quite as clearly, but typically the face effects that you get are distributed between the N290 and the P400 components. And those are effects that we see in adults at this N170 and N250 component. So just briefly, I'm going to show you a video of how we do this in the lab. I know there are other people here who also have mastered this, but I get asked a lot about how difficult it is to do this work with infants. And I don't think it's actually very difficult. It just takes having a lot of people who are really, really good with babies and some nice distracting toys. So what we typically do is stick the baby on their mother's lap. We have a toy that makes lots of sound and lights up, and then we kind of sneak up behind them and stick the net on their head and then go ahead and start making some adjustments. And the infant is usually seated right in front of the computer screen, so as soon as we can get all of the electrodes in place, we can just turn the infant around and start to show them images. And so the process is actually very fast, and it allows us to collect a little bit more data than you'd be able to collect if you were using some of the other systems that have been used for EEG. So to look at the behavioral results for monkey faces, and so these are Novelty preferences pre and post training. So in this kind of reddish pink color is the pre-training and the gray color is the post-training. And you can see for monkey faces across all three groups, in pre-training, they all had a significant novelty preference, which was a significant difference of 50% looking time. However, post-training, there was a decline. So this is the typical decline that you would see in without any training at all. There's a decline after category level training and a decline after exposure training, but individual level training led to a maintenance in ability to discriminate these two, these monkey faces. Unlike the monkey training, the six-month-olds in the pre-training condition for strollers did not discriminate the strollers. For whatever reason, they either have already formed a category of strollers and they didn't see the need to tell the difference between the two strollers, or they didn't care to discriminate the two strollers at the time. But it's not the same effect that we see with faces. And so it's not that same perceptual narrowing effect where you have this increased ability that gets more specific with experience. But we did get an expertise effect, or what I'm calling an expertise effect. So post-training at the category level, they continued to not discriminate the strollers with category level training, but they did show a significant increase in ability to discriminate the strollers if they had individual level training. So now to take a look at the brain response. And so the brain response is actually very similar across the two conditions. And so this is just looking at post-training here. There were no pre-training differences. And we're looking at the upright and inverted. So upright is in gray and inverted is in black. And you can see here that category training and exposure training, there were no significant differences between upright and inverted monkey faces. And category training, there were also no significant differences between upright and inverted strollers at post-test. But for the individual level trained groups, the two groups, there was a significant difference. And for the monkey training, it started at this N290 component and continued on to that P400 component and was larger, I guess, larger for the N290 and the opposite direction for the P400 for the upright versus the inverted. And for the stroller training, the effects started, so we had this sort of kind of smush of this P1 and N290 component here, and it started around this P1 component, the significant difference between the two, and P1 and continued to the N290 component, but did not go at quite as far as the monkey training and go all the way to this P400 component. But the pattern of effects is still the same, that you got the significant difference in the same direction for upright versus inverted after the individual level training, but not after category or exposure training. So learning the individual names of monkeys maintains the ability to tell the difference between the monkey faces, and learning category labels or simply being exposed to the monkey faces leads to perceptual narrowing. And the process of perceptual narrowing cannot easily be applied to object processing, at least with strollers. Six-month-olds don't readily discriminate strollers prior to training, and more work is needed to determine why. And finally, learning objects and faces at different levels changes the way the brain responds to categories of trained stimuli and results in holistic processing of those stimuli as indexed by these ERP differences. So what we have recently begun, so we did those training studies, we started those about 4 or 5 years ago, and now I have an ambitious graduate student, Hillary Hadley, who wanted to know, she's very interested in sensitive periods. And although we couldn't really, we're currently trying to test the idea of sensitive periods by actually manipulating the timing that we're doing the training in infancy. But what she wanted to know was whether the training that we did in infancy actually has any long-lasting effects. So she brought back these kids who participated in the monkey face training study. And we're currently bringing back the kids who participated in the stroller training study. So I only have data for the monkey face training study now. And they're now 4 to 5 years of age, and we've gotten about, for the monkey face, we got about 66% of them to come back at 4 to 5 years of age, and we're having them complete two tasks. So we have a behavioral task, the delayed match to sample task, and we're having them, we familiarize them. So we tried to have a task that was as similar to the VPC task or the infant preference task as possible. So we familiarized them to a single monkey face for 5 seconds, then they had a 5 second delay, and then they had a test trial where they had to indicate the familiar stimulus. So we didn't use the unfamiliar stimulus because we wanted to try and keep it sort of at a perceptual level as opposed to trying to add on sort of an inhibitory response. And they did this task for monkey faces, strollers, and we put human faces in as a control. And then we did an upright and inverted ERP task for monkey faces, strollers, and human faces, and we did it in the context of a Finding Nemo task. So their task was to press a button every time they found Nemo, and then we gave them a Nemo sticker, and then they got a Nemo sticker book at the end, and they got to put their Nemo stickers in, and they were very happy and sat through lots of trials. So looking at the behavioral results for the match to sample task, there were no accuracy differences. There are no group differences in accuracy across the training groups. So we have the individual group in orange, category group in blue, and control group in green. Sorry, we did bring in a control group of age-matched control group of kids who did not participate in the training while they were infants. So there were no differences in accuracy. However, we did get differences in reaction time. And we got differences in reaction time for the human face condition. So you can imagine that there are actually two sort of predictions that you can make with this data. So you could suggest that the training that we did was a stimulus-specific training. And so that they might have a response later on, they might have maintained some ability to discriminate monkey faces because that's what we trained them on. But it also could be a process-specific training. And so we're training them at the individual level. We're training them to match an individual level name with a face. And we take the books away from them at 9 months of age. So what do they continue to match at the individual level? It's our hypothesis now, is the human faces. So we actually predicted that we'd see monkey face results. The human face was just a control condition in there. But we are getting faster reaction times for the individual level group relative to the category and control group for the human face condition. And then looking at the ERPs, I'm going to show you just both condition differences and also inversion, the inversion differences. And so we didn't find any condition differences across the three groups. So all of them had a larger peak-to-peak P1 to N1 response to the human faces relative to monkey faces relative to strollers, which, as a lot of you might know, is very consistent with the adult literature, that you would get a larger response to the human faces than the monkey faces and the strollers. And for the N250 component here, we got a larger response to human faces relative to both monkey faces and strollers. So the difference was greater or more negative, more of a negativity for the human face condition. And that, again, is consistent with N250 findings in adults. So for the inversion effect, what we found was that all of the training groups, or all of the groups, showed an inversion effect, but the direction of the inversion effect differed depending on which group they were in. So for the no training and the category training, the effect was larger for upright versus inverted. And for the individual level training, they got, this effect is only specific for faces. So there were no inversion effects for the monkey faces or for the strollers. So for the human face condition, they had the opposite effect here. So they have a larger response than to the inverted versus the upright. And if you remember back to that adult slide that I showed you, the adult response is greater for inverted than for upright. And so it seems that the kids that were in the individual level training group as infants have a more adult-like N170 response to human faces relative to these other two training groups. Okay. So learning lasts. Training at the individual level with monkey faces in infants influences performance and neural responses in children, but it does seem to be specific to human faces, which suggests that it's more of a process related to individual level learning as opposed to a stimulus-specific learning that they are experiencing. So I've already answered these three questions through those studies, that individual level learning and holistic processing seem to come out of, holistic processing seems to come out of individual level learning in infancy. Perceptual narrowing does seem to be specific to faces in the pattern, that early six-month-old discrimination. We didn't get any responses for objects, but we are now using a novel object category to try and see whether we can look at that effect again. And individual level learning does seem to have lasting effects. And so now, very briefly, I'm going to talk about whether perceptual narrowing influences the development of emotion processing. And so we know that emotion processing is that there are biases in recognizing emotions across races. There are the effect is not quite as well investigated as the other race effect, but there does seem to be in-group biases. And so what I wanted to see was whether there are emotion effects in infants, whether perceptual narrowing influences the development of emotion. So we came up with a VPC task, and this is just a replication of several other studies to verify that the faces that we used were, that we found the same effect with these faces. And so we reduced low-level perceptual differences with these faces in order to be able to record ERPs from the infants, and we reduced luminance and contrast differences within a range so that they are relatively equal within a range. And we familiarized them to a single face, followed by that face paired with a new face, and then we switched sides in order to make sure that they don't have a bias for one side versus another. And each infant saw both Caucasian and African-American faces. Then we have we had infants complete a congruency task where they heard a happy sound, laughing, followed by either a happy or smiling African-American or Caucasian face for a congruent trial. Or for incongruent trials, they might hear a sad sound followed by a happy face. So very quickly for the VPC results, we got the expected effect. Five-month-olds, and these are all the other data that I showed you were longitudinal. These data are cross-sectional. So five-month-olds showed novelty preferences for Caucasian and African-American faces, but nine-month-olds only showed, these are all Caucasian infants. Nine-month-olds only showed novelty preference for Caucasian faces. We did find a race effect in nine-month-olds. So the nine-month-olds had a larger P400 response relative for Caucasian faces relative to African-American faces recorded from occipital and temporal regions. The N290 and P400 in nine-month-olds showed congruency effects, and those were based on latency. So the latency of the congruent was slightly delayed relative to the incongruent sound face pairs. And these are responses to the face, not the sound. And there were no congruency effects for the five-month-olds. However, we did find congruency effects for a different component recorded in over the frontal central areas of the head called the negative component or the negative central component. And that component is sensitive or thought to be reflecting anterior cingulate activity and selective attention in infants. And for that component, infants discriminated congruent and incongruent sound face pairs for Caucasian and African American faces. And so one of the things, one more slide. One of the things that that I've been starting to think about in terms of these neural systems, because you can imagine that you could have this big blob in the back of the head that's, you know, undifferentiated, and then through synaptogenesis and pruning, you get this more specific response. Or you could possibly have a shift in processing from one system to another system during development. So the reason why five-month-olds are able to possibly discriminate own and other race faces equally well is because they might be using a totally different system than nine-month-olds are using when they're completing this task. And so there might be a shift in processing from 5 months to 6 months, from a more attention-based system to a perceptual system as they build these perceptual representations up. So, infant brain responses suggest that they detect matches and mismatches between an emotional face and an emotion sound. And five-month-olds do this for both familiar and unfamiliar races using brain regions associated with selective attention. And nine-month-olds do this only for familiar races and use occipital temporal regions of the brain. So I'm going to skip that and just end with, I started out sort of talking about conceptual versus perceptual development here, and I think, you know, infants learn from parents' labeling at a very early age, and talking to infants and providing labels and names for things in their world can help them make connections between what they see and what they hear. And in essence, this labeling helps them recognize people and objects and sets up a foundation for later learning. And so when you're talking about education and you're talking about implementing interventions, I think it's really important to think about education not starting in the classroom, but actually starting in the home early on during development. Thank you.
I just wondered if, even though you didn't see the effect that you expected with the training, as far as cross-species perception, do you think that if you had given the children more prototypes, more human prototypes, that you might have seen a widening of that category, for example, across racial or...
So you mean for the 4-year-olds that we brought back in?
For the babies. So you didn't actually see an effect. You didn't see the effect for monkey faces, so they weren't actually better. They narrowed in the monkey.
Well, they narrowed if they had category level training, but if they had individual, so if the monkeys were named Fiona and Boris, they maintained the ability. But if they were named monkey, then they narrowed.
Okay, so it's the 5-year-olds that just showed the monkey effect.
They showed the human effect.
So what do you think? Do you think that that would have made a difference at 5?
If I would have familiarized them to the monkey faces?
No, if you had a wider categories of people. So instead of just having Caucasian faces that you had.
They would have been better at
the training in infancy with faces
with
different races.
Oh, yeah. I think we would have had the same effect. I just used monkey faces because we can assume that infants don't have a lot of experience with monkey faces, whereas with other race faces, it gets a little bit more messy in terms of their previous experience with other race faces. So if we did training with monkey faces and human faces of multiple races, my prediction would be if we did training with other race faces that we'd find the same effect. I think it's
as
the
you
same
did with
thing,
the monkey
with the monkey faces.
At
I think
the
it's
9 month
same.
Olds.
Individual level learning, I think, is critically important for that. Yes. Yeah. Sorry.
Okay. Lisa. Hi.
Sorry.
So really nice talk. Great work. And I'm a fan. And I think that, you know, you're talking about this as the level of me creating concepts is interesting, and I think probably appropriate. I wanted to highlight, I think, something that's relevant, that's work from another TDLC, Penn training. I guess it was maybe pre-TDLC, but it's in our history, which is the work of Cindy Bukach, where we, you know, had looked at whether, because the labels, I mean, you're right, you're training with names, so individuation equals naming here, and most of our studies have been like that.
Yeah.
But when we created a game, like a computer game, where you were shooting these little novel objects depending on their identity or another feature, so it was individuation versus categorization, but there were no labels involved, we still saw the sort of advantages that you're finding. And so I think that it's important to at least consider the possibility that the naming, the language here, is not the only route to individuation. It's a very natural route mm-hmm. to individuation that we use, yeah. but it's not the only one.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's not clear whether you could have some other kind of associated sound or cue that would lead them to individuate. Anything that would lead them to look at two stimuli and try and find the things that tell them apart versus look at two stimuli and try and group them together is going to lead to that. And I think language does a great job of doing that. And I don't know in development what else would do as good of a job, but yeah, I don't think it's completely driven by language. Yeah. Yeah. So we're using the shine bugs now. I don't know, little kind of creature things that we've added some color and made them more baby friendly because we well, I did train it with strollers, but yeah. We got the expertise effects with strollers, but what we didn't get was the early six-month-old effect. And so what I think is that so there's two possibilities. This could be face-specific, or it could be that if we take a novel object that they've never had any experience with, that they would, you'd see the same pattern. And possibly, maybe if you had a novel object that kind of looks like a face versus one that doesn't look like a face. So those strollers didn't look like faces at all, and they were, you know, bottom-heavy, and there's a lot of research in the early face processing literature that suggests that babies really prefer to look at things that have more stuff on the top than on the bottom. And so maybe just those low-level perceptual cues might be important for this mechanism. And so we're trying to get at that by using these novel objects now with our training. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. We could train with these inverted stimuli, yeah. Yep. Yeah.
I just was wondering if you looked at the looking data or the ERP data for left and right differences in looking
for
preference.
For hemisphere differences?
Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't find, so there are numerical hemisphere differences in our data, but they're not consistent and they're not very clear. I mean, if I went through and picked an electrode, you know, I could find them there. So they're there. There are hemisphere differences, especially for the monkey faces. Not quite as much for the strollers, but they're not significant at the larger level. They're not quite as robust as what you would find typically in adults, I think. The same thing with the older kids. With the kids, for the human faces, the inversion effect actually seemed to be a little bit more left lateralized, but again, it wasn't a significant effect. Mm-hmm. Okay, great.